Blog Talk Radio.
What up, people? This is Speak It Like You Think It Radio. I'm your host, Naj. Stepping in once again to really get into some sports talk. This is for all the real sports fans out there. From the heroes to the cowards, the haters, the players, all of it. We really get into it. We discuss on the field, off the field, all of it. And really just, give you a unique perspective. A little different from what you're used to. But I'm joined tonight by the co-host, the one and only producer as well, the great Craig Barzy. Barzy, how you doing, man? I'll take those crickets, Barzy. It's all good. As long as you're running the board, I know you're there, even though I can't hear you right now. You can find Barzy, even though I can't find him right now, on Twitter. At BARZ_K. Great baseball mind, good opinions on sports. Definitely a dude to talk to. Tonight I'm going to be joined by the one and only Chandler Knight. You can find him on Twitter, Knight, KNIGHT, Chandler, CHANDLER7. That's Knight Chandler 7. Great opinionated. Look. It's a Brooklyn guy who's going to give you that real Brooklyn-ish when it comes to sports talk. Definitely glad to hear from him tonight. We'll also hear from Gordon Robinson. That's at G Robinson Sports. Great voice down here in Atlanta, giving great sports talk. And you can also check him out on his blog at 929thegame.com/CBS Atlanta. So definitely look into Gordon. We'll have a special guest on tonight to close the show much later. We'll get into that a little later. But for now, we just got to start getting into these topics. Barzy, are you out there? Still no Bars? If you got Chandler on the line, definitely bring Chandler in.
I'm here, man.
Okay.
Almost didn't make it, man.
What you doing with the mic? What you doing with the mic, my man?
Almost didn't make it, man. I fell asleep, man.
Oh, my God. No, look at this. See, this is what I'm talking about, people. This is what I'm talking about, see?
Yeah, man. My bad, man.
The $3.99 will be docked. There will be wages taken from Barzy. The wages that you are not paid will be taken. Chandler,
yeah, man.
Good to see you was here. Good to see Barzy was here. But definitely check their Twitter timeline. I didn't want to get into any of the topics and soil them before I got the two gentlemen on. But what up, though, Barzy? How you feeling, man?
All right, man. Sorry about the show, man. Just got in.
It's all good, man.
Waking
all good,
up, man.
Hardworking man. I understand. Chandler, how you feeling, man?
Brock, no, I'm not going to do it to you. I'm good, man. listen, I don't know if y'all know Flipboard, right? But I was on Flipboard the other day, and it was telling me about some rums, really good rums for $30 and under. I bought two bottles. So, let's do this.
Oh, so the man is feeling nice. Oh, okay. Well, look, even though we had that start to the show, we're still going to get real sports content for y'all. But before we get into on the field, we got to go off the field. And this story, like, I'm feeling a little, you know what I mean, indifferent. Well, I ain't going to say indifferent. I'm feeling a little conflicted about how I want to handle it because somebody has passed away. So you want to give that person that respect and their family that respect and saying they passed away, but you also don't want to just gloss over things and, you know what I mean, present it as if the person, like, look, I'm not the preacher at your funeral. You know what I mean? I can't just say, you know, all of your accolades and that's it. Like, we kind of got to talk about this. And by this, I mean, rest in peace to Aubrey McClendon, co-owner of the Oklahoma City Thunder, ex-CEO of Chesapeake Energy. He died today in a car crash. The police are still trying to, you know, go over the details and figure out. I mean, this was a one-person crash into a building. They're trying to figure out if it was a suicide. He was just indicted by the federal government on conspiracy charges and was supposed to turn himself in at 11 a.m. today. The crash happened at 9. That took his life. So, I mean, you make your own conclusions there of how this is going to play out. But we have to get into who this guy was and some of the things he was able to do. So, with that said, I don't know how much you guys have looked into the story, but, I mean, what were your thoughts just initially hearing that this guy was supposed to turn himself in? I mean, basically, he's going to go to jail for a long time. We're talking about conspiracy charges to rig oil and gas bids. He got rich off of fracking. Like, that was his big thing with Chesapeake Energy, to where they were, you know, getting domestic energy here in the U.S., getting the rise of gas and oil production in the U.S. really going. So, I mean, your thoughts on this story so far? I got a bunch of the details right in front of me, so don't worry if you think we're going to be slipping on any of that, and we'll get into a lot of it. But let me go Sleepy Man first. Barzy, your thoughts initially hearing this?
Well, I didn't know too much about the owner, but, you know, just catching the details of it, man, this is kind of shocking, man. You know, you figure, you know, sometimes with, you know, the wealthy, they can't, you know, they can't do the time. So, you know, they'd figure an easy way out. But if this is indeed what it was, man, it's shocking to think that he would choose this route, to go about ending your life, man. You know, that kind of fashion, you know, most people, you know, some sleeping pills or, you know, swallow a gun, that type of thing. But this route, man, I'm shocked by that. But I'm not surprised by, you know, someone who is wealthy, you know, when faced with being punished for a crime and doing jail time, chooses, to end their life. I'm not surprised by that. Just surprised by the fashion in which, or the method in which he chose to go about it.
Okay. So not the outcome, the method is surprising. I agree with that. Chandler, just looking at this from, like, look, I know where we're going to take this eventually because we're going to talk about what kind of guy this dude was. But just looking at this from the standpoint of, do you think he was just this frightened, or are we, like, the tinfoil hat people are already starting up their brigade too? Like, what are you looking at? Like, do you want to go down the tinfoil hat people who are already saying, like, where are you going, Chandler?
Well, you know me. I love a good conspiracy theory. I served the United States military, so it's not a conspiracy theory. I don't believe. and those of us that served understand exactly why I say that. I think it could be either or. The route he took, honestly, as someone who's tried 8 times, succeeded twice, brought back. Actually, honestly, we was like, oh, you could have done. Hey, listen, guns don't always work, pills don't always work. People call cops and you get revived and the bullet don't actually hit the right spot. I personally think that he did it on his own. I think that he didn't want to face what was coming for him. And if you look at his life and his lifestyle, it's understandable. This was a cat who lived larger than life, okay? Private jets, jetting off to, you know, islands that most people don't even know exist, you know, rubbing elbows with world leaders. I'm going to go to jail? Was you stupid? I'm not going to jail. I'd rather be dead. So I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. And the other thing is, if I go down the tinfoil hat road, which I have one, who was he going to rat out? You think he was the only one doing this? You think this doesn't have something to do with poison water in Flint, Michigan? Fracking? Let's connect the dots. I need a real tinfoil hat on you. Right, let's connect the dots. Okay,
right,
so,
there's going to be a lot of blogs, think pieces, and a few books written on those type of stories, and maybe a made-for-TV movie on something like that. That's definitely coming down the pipe. You know what I mean? No matter what, that's coming down the pipe. But let me get into some of the things of understanding who this guy was. He had a real habit of mixing his personal with his business as far as finance, and you already know that stuff can get real murky after a while. He owned a 20% stake in the OKC Thunder, and with that, he signed a advertising contract with his energy company for $36 million. And his energy company also paid $4 million a year for the naming rights to Chesapeake Energy Arena, which the OKC City Thunder play in. He started this business in 89 with 10 other people, and it grew to such a huge size that by 2008, when he ran into some financial trouble, he was dumping stock to the tune of $569 million. And as of today, he owns less than 1% of the stock. He flooded the board with friends of his who he showered with gifts and trips everywhere with the company planes and boats. And it was nothing for people who weren't affiliated with the company at all to be taking a company plane on trips to Paris, London, you know, all kinds of great destinations that people would want to visit. So with that said, is it wrong for us to talk about this guy and say that he is that one percenter that so many people are upset about and feel like that they've kind of done a disservice to this country in the form of crony capitalism and enriching themselves and their friends at the cost of essentially the rest of us? Let me go Barnsley first.
Nah, it's a fair assessment you make. You know, I think, you know, some of this that you know, what you're saying here is an indictment to the 1%. You know, we look at it and, you know, people are upset about, you know, this type of you know, behavior that some people are exhibiting and putting forth. So if this is true that this guy did, you know, everything that what you're saying here he did, man. Yeah, I mean, people should be upset about this. People shouldn't stand for this.
Yeah. And if anybody has any questions or really wants to get a lot of info, go to the Chesapeake Energy story on Reuters. The story was by Bill Wall, W-A-U-G-H, and John Schiffman and Anna Driver, and Brian Groh also contributed to it. But this was a 2012 story that talked about his life, and Forbes actually called him the most reckless billionaire on earth. The story is called The Lavish and Leveraged Life of Aubrey McClendon. Chandler, what do you take from that as far as the statements we just made about him and his personal life?
I think that that's human nature. Naj and I have been speaking about something that I'm trying to work on, and one of the things I said to him is I'm worried about once the dollars become a certain level, people start trying to put stuff in their pocket. It's human nature, man. It's human nature. And if you want to take it from the, or you sold only 1%, listen, your man that's on the block that's selling them packs, and he start coming up in the world. Now he start hooking his boys up. They ain't got to pay the same money everybody else pays for the pack. This, that, and the third, and he hooking up. It's the same thing, man. It's the same thing, just on a higher level. When when you start dealing with dollars like that, unfortunately, the venal nature of man comes into play.
Mm.
It comes into play. I got people kissing my behind basis, telling me, oh, my God, you're so great. You're so great. You're so great. You're so great. You don't have to pay for dinner here, sir. You're such and such. Hey, have the best table in the restaurant. Are you kidding me? Who does it? And listen, you got to be really strong. And I'm not saying everybody, because we know it's not everybody. But the majority of us, we fall into that trap. We start believing the nonsense, man. And we start hooking up, yo, that's my man, and that's my girl, and such, and that's my third cousin from Iowa. Yo, hook him up, too. And we start taking advantage.
Yeah.
Listen, he did what he did. It was wrong. I'll acknowledge that. But I'm not going to act like I wouldn't do the same thing. Because the fact is, I might. I'd like to think I wouldn't. I'd like to think I'm better than that. But the reality is, I may not be. The reality is, I may be cool. Yo, nah, yo, want to go to Turks and Caicos? You know what I'm saying?
Right,
yo, boss,
right.
Yo, my man, you want to go to Bali? Come down to the airport, kid, I got you. Don't worry about it. Don't even bring no luggage, kid. I got you. You know, nah, yo, it's all on the company. Don't worry about it. You understand what I'm saying? You start calling people. Yo, what are you doing, man? I don't even know your name. What's your name? Joe? Hey, Joe, you want to go to Paris? Let's go to the Louvre. I'm not spelling Louvre, but let's go. This is what happens, man, with these cats when they get this money. He's not the only one doing it. He was just a little too boisterous doing it.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Like you said, anybody can fall into something like this. And that's a great point about options. When you don't have the option of being corrupt, it's really easy to be moral and talk about how good you are. Put yourself in a really bad situation and see if you start dripping away some of those morals, or put yourself in a real powerful situation and see if you abuse your power. So I think that's a really fair assessment you made then. But the one thing I do have to say is the drug dealer or the violent offender who we see in the city who does, you know, atrocious things, they're looked at in that way. They're depicted in that way. But the people like him who do disgusting things, we have to have a smoking gun to look at them in that way, even though the damage that they can do is usually, you know, multiplied times whatever you want compared to what that one singular or, you know, few guys in a crew can do. These type of guys like this can hurt whole communities, whole cities, and sometimes whole states. And if we're going to take it to a superficial sports level, ask the fans of Seattle about their basketball team. When a guy like McClendon and Clay Bennett cooked up that scheme to get that team out of Seattle and get it to Oklahoma City. He's a part of that group, too. So, I mean, that's on him, too. And just to show y'all how the rich get richer and it never stops, his wife, Kate, the heiress to Whirlpool. The money never stops, man. Money never stops, but yeah, man, this is a crazy situation. I'm really going to be interested going forward to see how this plays out and see what moving parts we find out about as this goes. Because, you know, right now we just got this initial story, and okay, let me throw this out there: you're a billionaire. If this is the decision you make, like everything's so bad, this is the decision you make, and you pull out of the lot, and this is what you're choosing to do. Can y'all take a guess on which vehicle?
It wasn't an expensive one. I'll tell you that. It wasn't expensive.
Good guess.
And it was,
good guess.
And it was something that was going to blow up real easy. And I guarantee you the will has been changed 3 months ago.
Barzy? You got a guess?
No. Some kind of SUV?
Ah, Barbie's going to it. A 2013 Chevy Tahoe. Thought that was a little surprising. I thought it would be like some kind of souped-up muscle car when I read it initially.
Do you have a gas can in the passenger seat, too?
Oh, man. Here you go.
Look, they're going to say he was drunk. Listen, here's the conspiracy theorist in me. It's going to come out that he had been drinking, and you're going to hear nothing else about this after this. In a week, you will never hear another word about this. That's the conspiracy theorist in me.
Yeah, the tinfoil story is this is somebody else. We got to see the dental, or otherwise this man is in Europe somewhere with plastic surgery, living it up with a cut of his money. But enough with the conspiracy tinfoil hat stuff. No matter what, somebody lost their life, regardless of how what we think about how he lived it or the decisions he made. It's a sad thing that somebody's no longer here. He's got people who are weeping for him. Actual friends, and then a whole bunch of acquaintances who were able to draw money from him who are now crying crocodile tears as I watch all these different colleges posting on social media about, you know, this guy who gave huge donations to them. And, you know, that's going to be a hole at some of these universities, more than likely, the fact that he was donating all that money there. But, Aubrey McClendon passed away today. We'll see what these circumstances play out as far as how it happened and what happened. But no matter what, I guess we do have to say rest in peace to that man. And, prayers to his family. I guess that's the best I can do with that. I guess we'll move from the serious to the silly. And get out of such a heavy topic, and we'll start to get back into sports now. Now, it may seem like I have an axe to grind this show because I go from that story to another guy who I've talked about really badly on the show. I like to give y'all what I think firsthand so you know there's a bias there when I'm talking about somebody I don't like. So we're going to go to Daryl Morey down in Houston, the man of analytics. And I don't say that disparagingly about analytics. I think they're a viable option for anything you want to do, especially in sports. And I think they should be used to come to whatever conclusion you want. But I think the problem lies in if you start leaning on analytics too much and think that you figured out the golden seal with analytics and know everything. So Daryl Morey, who's trying to hold this dumpster fire in Houston together, after waving Marcus Thornton and Ty Lawson, dangling Dwight Howard out before the trade deadline, Eureka, he's got it. Today, he signs Michael Beasley. Chandler?
While you were talking, right, I'm old. So there was a song, I think was it The Drifters, Float On? Y'all know the song I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And all I kept hearing in my head was smoke on, smoke on. Because the fact that Michael Beasley, right, he is back in the NBA knowing damn well he ain't stopped smoking no weed. He ain't stopped smoking no weed. And he ain't stopped smoking no weed. All right? Michael Beasley, and I'm being serious here, Michael Beasley physically had more talent than Blake Griffin could ever hope to have. Michael Beasley was that physically gifted. I'm not going to say he is because I haven't seen him in a few years. Michael Beasley was that physically gifted. He was physically gifted enough to be a Hall of Fame player. Those were the physical gifts God gave this young man. And he chose to smoke weed instead of utilizing those gifts. He chose to smoke weed. I'm a guess that.
What's the Nero movie?
So Daryl Morey, in his ultimate wisdom, says, let me go get the one guy that can't help my team. As a matter of fact, let me go get the one guy that will hurt my team worse than Josh Smith. Let me go get a guy, okay, who's worse than Josh Smith, that's going to get me in the playoffs. How does Daryl Morey have a job today? Seriously. How does he have a job today? As an ownership group, when he walks in your office, right, and says, listen, I know we trying to make the playoffs, and we're a couple of games out. Matter of fact, we less than a half a game out, right? This is what's going to do it for us. We got to go get Michael Beasley. How do you not immediately drug test him and drag him out of the freaking building? Seriously.
Sir, we need your access badge. You can't come to the building anymore. So is he playing clips from China, Barge? Like what is he doing to justify this? Like, let's go where Chandler's going. How does he handle that meeting? Is he playing the clips from China where Beasley's averaging a good 30-something? How does he do this with a straight face?
You brought up analytics at the beginning. I don't think analytics had anything to do with this hit signing, but I don't know. Maybe it's just an act of desperation, man. It's grasping at straws.
Exactly.
I mean, what else does he have left to do? You know, you look at Daryl Morey, yeah, you know, the Harden trade, getting Dwight Howard, you know, some things started to spin out positive, but, you know, recently, these past couple of years, you look at the Chandler Parson, you know, the handling of his contract situation when, you know, he went and tried to pursue and get guys like Carmelo and try to play this fantasy basketball type of just gathering all kind of wanting to gather all kind of mismatched talent without really having a plan. They had a good team with Chandler Parsons, and they could have done some things if they stuck together. But he chose to go another route and let Chandler Parsons escape for little or nothing, trying to chase after Chris Bosh, who Chris Bosh was always going to sign back with the Heat. I think the Rockets was the fallback plan for him, and you know he pushed all the chips in the middle of the table. And the way he handled that whole situation, I thought he earned himself a firing. For that, but this seems like it smells like an act of desperation to me. I don't know. You know, obviously, like my man Chandler said, Beasley is a talent, but the guy's got problems, man. He's had problems, so I don't know how this helps you when you add it to all the other combustible parts in the mix that are already on the Rockets. Josh Smith, Harden, Dwight. I mean, they just bought out Ty Lawson. I don't know how this helps them in the pursuit of anything. If they're trying to get into those last final spots in the West, this definitely ain't the way to go about it. So it just smells and reeks of desperation, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And then, if you're going to get in, you need to get in at least 7 because you don't want that 8 ball and get out there with those damn Golden State Warriors in a first-round series where you might be embarrassed to the point of some guys can't play in Houston anymore. Like, the embarrassment in that series could be as bad as, we want to go back, that Atlanta Hawks team, the Joe Johnson, Josh Smith-led Hawks team that got eliminated 1 year so drastically. I think the record still stands. I want to say it was Orlando, but we'll bring an Atlanta guy on to really give us the perspective on that. But look, man, Daryl Morey, he analytics is what he was raised on. That's what he was using. That's how he made his name. And he showed that he can build a team. He can get some assets together. What he didn't show is that he can then put the assets together in a way, chemistry-wise, to where you can compete for a championship. And now everything's falling apart, and I think he's looking for a lifeboat to get up out of there. And, Michael Beasley, man, like, this is crazy. But, Barzy, check the board. I know we got Gordon coming in. And for those that don't know, we're talking about at G Robinson Sports, the great Gordon Robinson, another member of the show. Gordon, how you doing, man?
What's going on, bro?
No, not much, man. We're sitting here discussing these things. Now, I don't want to stick on Morey too long, man. This topic really doesn't weigh that much. But we got to get the local flavor in here on this, though. Today, supposedly on vacation, by text message, the all-time leading receiver for the Atlanta Falcons was cut today. We're talking about one Roddy White. Gordon, did you expect this, or did you think they'd give him another run?
I was hoping they'd give him another run. I expected them to cut him just because how talks have been going, and you saw how Shanahan was basically kind of cutting him out of the offense last year. The fans, he was used mostly last year simply because the fans was calling his name during games. Like, when you have a whole entire dome screaming "Free Roddy White," and the next game you come out and, like, the first five passes are, like, straight at Roddy White. They're terrible plays, and they're just throw it to Roddy. And it was like a big middle finger to the fans almost. Like, you want him, here it is. You know what I'm saying? And just threw it, like, three or four times straight to Roddy White just to get it out of the way almost. So I wanted them to keep him for a variety of reasons. One, I think Roddy's leadership is very understated in that locker room. Two, I think if the Falcons are going to focus on a running game, he's probably one of the best run blocking receivers probably since like Hines Ward. And then just for the chemistry's sake, I mean, now if you don't have Roddy White, now you've added a need to, in my opinion. With Roddy White, maybe you still had a need at the receiver. You still needed to get a receiver just in case. But now you definitely have to get a receiver. So you just created another need on top of all the other needs you had in terms of D-line and linebacker, finding safeties, maybe another corner, finding some offensive guards. Now you just added wide receiver to it because, as we all know, Julio Jones has great talent, but he also gets hurt.
Yeah.
So if you're just pushing your eggs all into Julio Jones' basket, I mean, what's going to happen if he can only play 7 games? Or what happens if he can only play 9, 10 games? And 6 games, he's on the sideline. Mm-hmm. I don't get it because from what we saw last season, Shanahan's offense is basically, I'm going to throw it to this guy. And that was it. If we didn't run the ball, you threw it to Julio Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. So you, in doing that, I mean, that's why they got off to a fast start at 5-0, meaning 5-0, 6-1 start. And after that, it was crap because everybody adjusted to it, and you didn't make any adjustments. And then now you get rid of the second option, and you expect to take a step forward. I don't get it. Shanahan's offense has to come together some type of way for fans in Atlanta. If you were anywhere around the city and you were listening to sports talk, when the news came down, everybody was negative on it. There wasn't one person who probably called into a radio show was like, "Good riddance," you know what I'm saying? Get him out of here, anything like that. Because we still don't know what Roddy has left in the tank. If he goes to Carolina, he's a Carolina kid. You know, coming from South Carolina, he's a Carolina kid. It's very plausible that he could sign with, I don't know what their salary cap stuff structure looks like, but he could go to Carolina, and you'd have to see him twice a year. Dirk Cutter, the Atlanta Falcons' former offensive coordinator, just got the head coaching job in Tampa Bay.
He could
go to Tampa Bay, right? And come back to easily burn you, and then you'll find out what kind of guy you had. And now everybody's going to start calling for the head of Kyle Shanahan.
Which would be a good thing, in my opinion. I'm not a Kyle Shanahan guy. Well, hold on, Gordon, because I'm just going to use the Roddy White stuff with you. I'm going to take it to another direction with everybody else. And I'm definitely not letting Chandler get a hold of this question right here. But look, I'm saying this as a person, like, look, I'm definitely not advocating for this because I don't believe he is. But I just want to get a well-known, well-informed Falcon fan to say this so Falcon fans don't bother me on Twitter. But Roddy White, Ring of Honor guy, nowhere near Hall of Fame guy. Is that fair?
That's fair. I mean, You're looking at a receiver who came in the league with a bad case of the drops. He had a stretch of about 4 or 5, maybe 6 years where he became the guy and he's a fan favorite because we've seen the progression. You saw him put in that work to become where he is, to get those numbers. And we, as a fan, you probably like him to continue in a black jersey because you don't know where the story could end. He could still be of value. But now with new management, with same management but new coaching, the Falcons elected to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
But I agree. As of right now, no, not a Hall of Famer. Falcon Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's nothing to sneeze at for any football player out there. You make it to a Ring of Honor of a franchise, that means you were really, really good. So just because you don't make the Hall does not mean you're a bum. So please have a little bit more in the conversation when we start talking about these people, possibly Hall of Famers. It doesn't have to be disrespectful. But Roddy White has a pinned tweet on his Twitter account, because I went to check it to see if he gave any response to what had happened tonight. And his pinned tweet is a little problematic for me, and this is what I want to take to Chandler and Barzy before we move on. Chandler, his pinned tweet is a daily fantasy site where it says you can turn $1 into a million. at a certain point, are we now abusing the fans when it comes to players who side with these leagues who run this daily fantasy? So, like, are fans being abused right now, like, and taken advantage of for I don't know what to call it, man.
Dude, there's so many things I can say about Roddy Drop White.
That's why I knew.
But,
I already knew. That's why I didn't even want to get into it.
But I'm going to say this. That's just sad. If that's his pinned tweet, that's just sad. It really is. It's sad. It's sad. That's really all I can say about it. If that is your pinned tweet, a daily fantasy league where people go waste their money gambling, I would have thought you could do better. And I'm going
to
leave it at that.
All right. Barzy, I know you're not throwing a few bucks out there on no daily fantasy. You're a very well-studied, you know what I mean, critical man. I know you haven't fallen for the daily fantasy hustle. Your thoughts on Roddy pending that as his tweet?
Do you know if he has a direct affiliation with the daily fantasy site? Are they paying him some money?
No. I'm just making the assumption that he is, but I don't know at all.
It seems like you would. I don't know. I don't see what other motive you would have to put that on there unless you were getting something, you know, some kind of kickback. Mm-hmm. But you know, hey, you know, those daily fantasy sites. To answer your question, no, I don't. I haven't participated in any of that. But you know, these things are put out there, man. You know. People have a right to, you know, partake in it if they want. If they don't, then don't do it. If it's not for you, don't do it. But, you know, obviously they're existing and they're gaining in popularity for a reason. So, you know, obviously if that's what Roddy White chooses to put up there, then, you know, I assume that he's probably getting a kickback for that, you know. Capitalism, mm-hmm. I guess, you know. He's trying to bring people in to, you know, I guess. That's all I can say. But I wanted to ask Gordon a question, man. What's Roddy White's most memorable play, man, that you remember as a Falcon, man? What's his most memorable play? Something that,
you know,
he, like, you
And to answer honestly, there's not a play that you would say this defines Roddy's career. Like, if you would go, someone would tell you, like, Terrell Owens or Jerry Rice, or he doesn't have, like, the catch that put the Falcons into the playoffs or a big win over a team. He had just been the level of consistency that he became is probably what he's most known for. His leadership more than anything else. you can like when and this just for me going being a person who was able to go to Falcons training camp many years and seeing the guys' attitudes, seeing how guys interact with each other, he was one of the guys that people gravitated towards. You know what I'm saying? When things got kind of hectic, when things got, you know, got sketchy and people were walking on eggshells, Roddy would crack the joke, you know what I'm saying, to have, you know, kind of relax the room a little bit. But he was also a guy that everybody knew that they could lean on, they could depend on if anything went down. But to answer your question, honestly, there is no real big, this is a play that defines Roddy White.
Well, I was just, I wouldn't say necessarily defined, but when I do think of Roddy White, there's one play that I do remember. It always seems to come up like it's being played on the TV every time. That's that damn pass when they played New Orleans. Mike Vick, wide ass open down there about the 10-yard line. Could have fair catched the ball, dropping it. Then seeing Jim Moore drop to his knees. That's the play I remember. Every time. Every time I think about Roddy White.
That's not fair for so many different reasons. For one,
I know it's not fair, but that's what I remember here. That's the most that's the most vivid thing that I recall whenever his name is brought up. It always seems to just come rushing up whenever his name is brought up.
And that's understandable,
even though he's a great player, but you know,
even as a Falcon fan, like we, if you say the name Harry Douglas, I think of him falling down over the 5-yard line almost. I think it was when we had the lead over San Francisco. We could have iced the game against San Francisco, and basically the carpet man seemed to reach up and grab him. So I definitely understand, but in terms of, like, I don't think anybody was really able to catch a Mike Vick pass not named Algie Crumpler
during that time. Yeah, it was
right at that point in time.
But man, that drop was damning, boy. Because man, that was when you really looked at Jim Moore and said, "Man, I don't know if you really cut out to be an NFL coach. You can't have your emotions like that to where you're dropping to your knees on a bad play. Like you're the leader. Like you can't do that." Like that
play
was
crazy, bad,
though.
That play
was
bad,
a bad play. But you can't do
at
that.
At that time, man.
You can't do that.
Jim Moore had done so many things wrong at that point in time, man, that it was the least of it. I mean, once again, I told you the story about, you know, I think they had the Falcons scrimmage game where they all went to a local high school and he hops out of the car with D'Angelo playing in his Lambo playing Madden with D Hall, you know what I'm saying? And this is your head coach, he's riding shotgun with D'Angelo Hall of all people playing Madden in a Lamborghini. That was your leader.
Coach,
you know
coach
what I'm
gotta
saying?
Be above that. Man, coach gotta be above that. You can't be out playing Madden with the players in the Lambo. That's too far. And to close this out, man, I'll just say, as bad as that tweet was from Roddy, nothing will ever be as bad as that horrible person, Dan Gilbert, owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers, when he made that deal during the NCAA tournament for that bracket challenge where they told people, if you get 100% right on your bracket, you win $1 billion. And they got everybody's information and were able to cold call, email, and harass people for one of those home loans he was trying to pawn off on people. So it was basically a way of basically fishing for info, and people gladly gave it away with the chance to win $1 billion for doing a perfect bracket. Because that happens all the time, right? Perfect bracket. So, yeah, man, that's the only thing worse than daily fantasy I can think of. But the hustle worked for him. Barzy, we should be getting a call at 9:45 from a former media member for decades in New York, baseball writer, just great, overwhelming, historic holder of baseball information, man, the great Doc Stanley from New York. So you should definitely keep up on the board. He should be calling in anytime soon.
347.
And if we have Doc on, if we have Doc on now, definitely bring him on. Doc Stanley, are you with us? Okay. I'm about
no, that would
five
still
tonight.
Be me.
That's 347 is China. Who? What?
No, it's
what's
Chandler.
Digits, man? Yeah,
I'm guessing
Chandler.
New York.
What's,
yeah, I'm guessing New York. For,
yeah, I don't
Doc.
See him then, man.
Okay.
Hold on. There's a 917 just kicked in, man. Let's see.
917
okay.
Is New York.
Okay, he's on time. You see how it goes, man? So right now we'll be joined by the great sports writer, great journalist, radio host, and baseball historian, and, you know, a guy we can really look to as a resource when it comes to baseball. And y'all already know how I feel. I'm slowly being turned, but that's going to take some time. But I think you guys are going to get a lot more out of this conversation than I will. But Mr. Doc Stanley, are you on?
Hey, thanks a lot. Now, first of all, praise and honor, first and foremost, to the good master and his son. Thanks a lot for those kind words. Thanks so very much. Kind of humbling there.
It's all good, man. Just letting you know you are appreciated. You were one of the guys who were in the media rooms back in the day when they didn't want you there, trying to interview people, trying to cover this game at a time when it was real contentious about who they wanted to cover and what they wanted to respect. Doc, we just want to, you know, just get into that mind of information on baseball. And can you give us something on some of the people you interviewed and just kind of break
well,
that
you know,
down?
Thanks so much. Nothing changes. Often things change to remain the same, you know, and we thank you so often for being part of Sports in Depth. The show here on Live Talk Radio, my Justin Gray Radio Station. I mean, let's look at last year. Last year was the 40th anniversary of Frank Robinson being the first black manager in Major League Baseball. And last year, 40 years later, we had the exact same number we had 40 years before. One. One. I mean, you know, they don't. The late Dick Edwards, or Hobie Stallone, told the story here in New York City, the capital media of the world, okay, which is the most racist media. Well, he talked about how the black media was treated where during the baseball season, the black media set in the football press box. And then during the football season, the black media set in the baseball press box. I don't know. I think here in New York City, I think George Willis may be the only African-American daily baseball right out of New York City, the so-called media capital of the world. I mean, these things haven't changed. You look at the actual. I remember there was an article I saved, if I can grab it for some years back, for one of the gentlemen that grew up here with us. He was, talking about, I mean, you know, there are no African-Americans in the press box. I don't even know if there's any, well, there's, I think at one time there up in Boston, the head of their media department was African-American, but per se, Cecil Harris, who grew up here in New York City and a friend of my sister, they were talking in an article, Hockey's Big Chill, African-Americans dominate the basketball scene. They excel in football and basketball. Tiger Woods and the Williams sisters have scored in their respective sport, but one major sport is still ice cold to black athletes. At that time, they were talking so much about hockey. But I mean, you look at baseball today. I mean, I'm looking at how does a guy like Dusty Baker, who was manager here three times, and Dusty was out of a job? Dusty was out of a job. Where's Willie Randolph? Here's a guy who has the second best winning percentage in the history of New York Mets, comes from the Yankees, winning his organization ever. To date, he's the only second baseman in Yankee history never to commit an error in postseason play. He's from the Yankee stock, and he doesn't have a job. Chris Chambliss has never been even interviewed for a job. Interviewed. Mm. Here's a guy who got fired as the batting coach of the world champions. Hold on here. Let me say this again. Fired as the batting coach of the world champions? Oh, he was black. That's how it happened. How did it happen? I mean, his lovely wife, Audra Chambliss, and I don't think anybody sings No Loser's Dream better than that. She does. And nobody's been a reason. But she said, you know, systematically, Willie and Chris were removed from the Yankees' coaching positions, in lieu of the fact that there was fear that if Joe Torre had gotten fired, automatically they'd be there. I mean, you look at that little triangle where we throw in Lee Mazzilli. Lee Mazzilli got a manager job before both of them. In fact, you know, Chris never got one. You know, where are – I'm looking at the special consultants. They bring Reggie as a special consultant. That never done anything with Dave Winfield. I mean, last year, not the 2015, Willie Randolph, and, you know, we always take our own. All right, Willie Randolph applied for a coaching job at the Yankees. And the Yankees told Willie Randolph they weren't going in that direction. And, you know, when it comes to African Americans, they're never going in our direction, outside of far away. Here's a guy who was your first black captain. And I thought it was sort of insulting when they made Willie the first black captain because they made him the co-captain with a pitcher, the Gator.
Right.
Ron Gibby. I'm sorry.
Right, Doc, hold on. I got to get some questions from the guys because they haven't had a chance to talk to you. So I want them to be able to pick your brain. Let me go to Chandler first. Definitely. Let's get into some dialogue with Doc while we got him on. We still got 10 minutes to go.
First off, I've met you before, and I don't remember where. When I got a picture online of what you look like, I've met you. I'm from Brooklyn. I've met you, and I don't remember where.
Hey,
I got a concussion.
Raised in Brooklyn.
So I've met you, and it's crazy because I'm looking at your face like, I know this dude. But I appreciate what you bring in because when you were talking, I think of Bob Watson, how Bob Watson got thrown overboard for Brian Cashman. Okay.
I have
hated Brian Cashman my entire Yankee fandom because Bob Watson got thrown overboard for Brian Cashman. Okay. Mm-hmm. Bob Watson built the teams that Brian Cashman gets credit for. Okay. Chris has never gotten any credit. One of the better first base, one of the better hitters in baseball history. But you're right. The lack of African American coaches, managers, is not something that's talked about. A lot of it with Willie is the New York media killed him when he was coaching the Mets. They killed him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole no facial hair and, oh, you're trying to – David Wright coming out saying, oh, he's trying to bring the Yankee way to the Mets, and that's not the Mets way. You ain't won a damn thing.
Well,
you're talking about that's not
the Yankee way. 27, the greatest winning team in baseball history.
But, yeah, it's – you know, I'm glad Dusty has a job again, but it is what it is. I mean, they put rules in place to hire women, and they're not looking at the fact that they're slowly phasing the African American out of baseball.
There's no question about it. I mean, and Dusty, the only African American manager to win a Manager of the Year award 3 times, who won the World Series with the Dodgers, won the Gold Glove with the Dodgers, was the guy that made the Dodgers the only team in the history of baseball to have 4 guys with 30 more home runs. Dusty only got the job in Washington because a white guy turned it down. That's all. Dusty wouldn't have been hired. Dusty got the job in Washington because I believe it was Black turned the job down. So Dusty got the job. And in Chambers had one of the biggest home runs in the history of the Yankees. If he'd been a white guy, he'd always had a job with the Yankees for hitting that home run. Always had a job. Hit the home, got him back in the World Series. And just slap in the face. He never got an opportunity to manage it. And Willie, I mean, for the New York media to get on Willie was always a guy, never stirred the pot, okay, never spoke out about nothing, you know, always kept reserved, never made any waves. So for him to come back at him, I mean, you know, it wasn't him that struck out with the bat on his shoulder. It was Beltran. Beltran was the stuff that struck out, not Willie. Yeah, and it's amazing. After Beltran left the Mets, he became a hitting phenom. Went to Houston and went crazy, but to act like Willie was the one that took the third strike. And you just look at all those guys. Buck Showalter's got a job again. You know, Mazzilli had got a chance at a job. Giraldi, the year that Willie should have won Manager of the Year, Giraldi, okay, who got fired with a second division team, won MGR of the Year. And as we talk about, as we move into the 21st century, okay, I mean, where's Derek Jeter? But as we have an African-American president, the Yankees are not remotely thinking about a black manager. Now, I remember a Latin guy told me, if we watch the way they're drafting players today, not only systematically, Marion Boykin, the great Marion Boykin, the greatest boxer of all time, told me back in the Little League that systematically they're leading the black players out, okay? If Nas is a great hitting shortstop, Okay, so now he's one of four or five of the best. Of course, you take him out of shortstop and you put him in the center field. He's one of the best center fielders, but now he's among 50 center fielders. Okay, so I mean, Bill, I'm gonna tell you what Bill White told me. Bill White was the first black president of the National League. Highest position ever by an African American. I remember, I see Bill now. Bill resigned. I said, Bill, what happened? He said, hey, they're not going to change. They're not going to change.
And people forget the Yankees were the last franchise.
Hold on.
The Yankees were the last franchise to have an African American player. People forget
they were next to last. Boston,
great piece of history. Let me get Barge in here with y'all, too, though.
I'm listening. I was just going to.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I was listening to this speech because I was just, going to ask what can be done to change it, because it seems like it's not just the managers, it's also the general managers that lack diversity, and there's also other positions that in baseball that seem to lack
third
that kind of
coaches,
diversity.
Third base coaches, another spot there, batting coaches.
I was going to talk about Tony Clark, and I think there was something he said a while back, and forgive me if I'm misquoting, something about I think he wanted to go in, managing. Go in the direction of managing, he was told with something or being a general manager, I forget, something he was told about, without a degree from a great college institutional degree, from one of the major universities, that, it wouldn't happen for him. And he went to a different route. It was something along those lines I heard on MLB Network. But I was just wondering from you, what are your opinions on what they can do to change, to change this as far as in general management, from the managers and other levels of baseball across the board to get more diversity in there?
So two things here. Thanks. And Nas, I'd like you to get this panel together, and we'll come together on my show, and we'll do a good 2 hours. Sadly enough, as Bill White said, they're not going to change. They make the rules. They do the hiring. I mean, you're testing my intellect by telling me you're going to interview a guy for manager. We're happy that he interviewed. What kind of interview do you give a manager? What kind of interview do you give? Okay, you get runners on first and third, and you got a guy hitting 347 on the – Dusty Baker told me something, because this book, I never understood the book. John Isaac told me something, the great, late, great John Isaac, one of the legendary Harlem Reds, told me, when you listen to white people, you have to understand the difference between him claiming to be history, okay? Because Dusty said, the book is, I've got Nas coming up, who's a left-handed hitter, and I've got Woodrow in the bullpen, who's a left-handed pitcher. Okay, so I should signal for the left-handed pitcher to come in to pitch to Nas, who's left-handed. But no. I'm going with Doc, who's a right-handed pitcher, to pitch to Nas. Well, what are you doing, Doc? Well, the left-handed pitcher, John Franco, Nas is hitting .472 against. Doc, the right-handed pitcher, is hitting .102. Whew. But the book says, it's crazy. Sadly enough, as often things change, they remain the same. It's not going to change. I mean, it's just sad. It's America's game. It's the fiber and core of this country. And unless we get
Doc, we gotta close out. Closed it out the best possible way. Just that statement that you just made, I think it'll let us go over after the show. But thank you for coming on. This is Speaking Like You Think It Radio. You will hear from Doc Stanley much more in a more relaxed way, because we'll have more time. Thanks to Chandler. Thanks to Bargy. Thanks to Gordon for coming on. Everybody have a good night. And
thanks, Nas. Just get that two together, and we'll do a show on my show. Gentlemen, a pleasure and honor. Thanks so much, Nas.
Pleasure having you on, my man.
My honor.
As I was told by the great Roy King, we still should have a few. After this song plays, we should have 5 minutes. Just a second. Yeah, we got to get Doc on with more time and a more relaxed way so we can get into more stuff with him and really pick his brain about the game of baseball and all that he has seen, all these different eras, all these different players, changes in the game. And also, have you guys with different questions that you wanted to ask somebody who is around, you know what I mean, for the end of the Negro Leagues and all the, you know, the beginning of blacks integrating into baseball and all these different things just about the game, period, strategy and talent, just everything. But,
yeah, man, with like a guy like that comes on, you really got to have, like, organized questions to ask him, like, you know, stuff off the cuff, man, so he can really, you know, go ham, give him about 30 minutes to get in there and, you know, with some organized questions and kind of, you know, give his views on them. But,
right. So this is the fault of the host for not organizing more time and giving everybody a heads up about Doc Stanley. So I'll take the L on this. Last minute addition to the show. But we will have Doc on it, you know, later. I know it's about to cut off on us now. But, Barzy, thanks for the time. Thanks for running the board, my dude. Gordon, thanks for calling in. I wish we could have got you in earlier, you know what I'm saying, on some of the other topics. But, hey, man,
good.
We can do this now anytime. So it's rolling. Speaking Like You Think It Radio, check us on Twitter, everybody, and definitely come back and listen to the show, man. We have disciplined ourselves to 1 hour. And if you ever listen to the show from before, you know this has never happened. But we've learned our lesson,
right,
and we've disciplined ourselves to 1 hour. Hey, man, thank y'all for coming on, man. Let's get up out of here, man.
All right, man.
All right, man. Have a good night, y'all.